Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Monday, July 18th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host, Chris Drew, here to talk about how Kirby Smart is nothing more. It's like Scooby-Doo. When you pull the mask back, Jim Harbaugh is under the mask in Georgia country as Kirby Smart wins the national championship, has the best year they've ever had at Georgia, right? So much momentum. And just it looks like he is just fumbling the fuck out of the bag. Cannot secure a recruit. NIL is not working well in Bulldog Nation. And so we're going to talk about all that, just kind of the trend that is, or the impact really that NIL and the transfer portal and all these things have had on college football when the national champ can't even buy a commitment. It's just crazy because you know that Kirby knows how to recruit. I mean, he learned from the shadiest of the shady in Nick Saban. So we're going to talk about that. Also want to mention every Monday, I'm going on with the real coach JB, Netflix finest, Last Chance U, the shit talking, real talking man himself. Hate me now, love me later. Go check out his YouTube channel. I'll be on there every Monday. And we also, Chris, are doing a little Menace takeover this week. We're going to take over JB's show the rest of the week, Tuesday through Friday. We're going to run it up to all his slap dicks out there. We might even have to sip on a little slapdick whiskey, maybe some slapdick vodka. You never know. We will have a couple pops and hang out on his show. So make sure you check that out. So you get Chris and I twice a day this week, starting tomorrow. But make sure to go tune in 1 o'clock Eastern time, 4 o'clock Pacific time to Coach JB's show, as I will be on there today and on there all week. So looking forward to it. Always a good conversation talking with him. And then it'll be fun to take his channel over. Chris, you excited?
Yeah, no, I am excited. I want Menace Army to be up in there strong, though. I need them bullying the slap dicks of the world, even though I'm sure we have a good little crossover fan base. I'm with it. I'm excited for the takeover for sure. And to do two show. I mean, you get to spend more time with me, Zach, and I know that's what you need.
Well, we appreciate everybody's support, man. Over 7,200 subscribers on the YouTube channel. These videos, our show is growing at an insane exponential rate. So appreciate everybody tuning in. Those of you that share it, if you could just subscribe, like the video, comment. I don't know. Give us a topic to talk about on Coach JB's show this week. Whatever you want to comment down below. I'm sure we'll have a bunch of questions coming in this chat, in this show. But appreciate the support, man.
Yeah, no, it's been really incredible. We're looking to get to 10K subs before the season starts. We're really excited about the growth and kind of direction of this channel. Something just silly that I thought was friggin' hilarious before we kind of dig into this Georgia thing. Caleb Williams and Mike Ferrell have been kind of trading jabs on Twitter, things I never thought I would say. Mike's trying to get things popping again, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what happened. You know, we had the clip about, you know, Arch Manning, who'd be a 3-star, and then after that kind of died down. He just had to go pick a beef with, I guess, Caleb Williams and Caleb Williams' dad. What's up with Buddy?
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. I mean, if Caleb Williams' dad actually said that, or if what was the quote that Oklahoma fans are the reason why Caleb left? They pushed him to leave because he didn't like Oklahoma fans. Like, no one would ever say that. I can't imagine. And, you know, not sitting here saying Mike Ferrell's lying, but just a bizarre thing to say and do. Like, who gives a fuck? The kid's gone. Like, let it go. Yeah. And why are we still hashing it out? Like, let the kid live.
Yep. We are going to talk about this a little bit later, but yes, missing on Caleb Downs is a big loss, especially here's the facts. The facts are you want safeties out there at all times. And whenever you lose out on a kid to Bama or a Georgia, that's always a loss because if you're Ohio State, the teams you want to be playing at the end of the year are Bama and Georgia. So yes,
and you know what? It's never a huge loss when you lose a recruit as long as you get a great one, right? So I think back to losing Jerry Jeudy or losing Calvin Ridley. Like it would have been great to have him, right? I really, really would have liked to have him. We would have been a better team, obviously, having someone that talented. But as long as you go get a great player, it's not going to be a huge deal, right? The problem is if you miss on him and miss four more times and you end up with an average ass safety. That's the real problem. The problem is not missing out on one kid. It's swinging and missing like Georgia's doing right now on an entire fucking class. That's where the issues come in. That's where you lose games you shouldn't lose and you're not as talented as you should be.
Yeah, so I want to flip to Georgia. We're going to circle back in Ohio State recruiting a little bit later in the show, but this was something that was brought to my attention and kind of I chatted with Zach about the last couple of days. In recruiting, we talk about momentum and how important momentum is. And the biggest thing you can do with momentum is when you win a title, it's usually easier to recruit nationally and especially recruit in your own state. And yet, Zach, I posted the top 10 in our notes. And they only have one kid committed in the top 10 in the state of Georgia after winning a national title. They don't have the number one quarterback in the state. In fact, the number one quarterback in the state is committed to Bama, even though Bama already had a quarterback committed. And they just lost out on the top tight end in the state, I believe, to Ohio State, which that one's weird because Georgia uses tight ends much better. Zach, is this a Kirby issue? Is this a kid see what's on the wall issue? Who's responsible for not closing these deals?
Well, you know, it solely falls at Kirby's feet, right? It's the impact of NIL is what it is. Because you look at the past classes in the state of Georgia, it's been hard to beat Georgia on these kids. But now to look at the top two tight ends in the state of Georgia, when they have Brock Bowers, who's going to be a sophomore, like they're showing that not only can they develop you, but they also will use the shit out of you, highlight you. Like for a tight end, their number one tight end is going to Tennessee. The number two tight end is going to Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's craziness. And NIL money is the only, I mean, it's one of the biggest culprits, right? You can't solely blame it on that. But these kids are finding out that a place like Tennessee, a place like Ohio State, they can maximize their personal brand and income. And it's like, yeah, Georgia's cool. National champ. Sweet, man. That's one in the last however long, like forever.
Yeah.
Are you going to do it again? Do you have a generational defense coming back? Like, you could sell me on that national championship all you want, but Tennessee's offering checks. I mean, offering stacks, racks to go to Tennessee. So that kid's going to go to Tennessee. And you look at it, it's just crazy. Some of these teams, I mean, Alabama has, it's either Alabama or Ohio State for the number one player in the state of Georgia. Clemson, number two. The number three players committed to Alabama. Number four to Tennessee. I mean, it's a bunch of Alabama. I mean, Louisville's stealing alignment out of there. Like, how is this going on? Yeah,
the Louisville one is really, really weird. I want to address this super chat real quick. Hardest kid to recruit and recruit and commit and why? Who'd you have a tough time with on that front?
Torrance Gibson was one of the hardest recruiting jobs that I ever have had just because there was no guidance. And it was, you were dealing, like I've said before, you were in the mud. I mean, you're dealing with Auburn and all these schools that are just, I mean, shady as fucking recruiting. And so, you know, when it's Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, that's going to be a pretty clean fight, right? Yeah. When you start throwing in Auburns and some of these other schools that just
Miami,
it doesn't make sense. Miami and Auburn and Ohio State, like, why are those schools in with Ohio State on a kid late? It's because there's a bunch of shadiness going on. And so Torrance was definitely probably the hardest recruiting job I ever had.
Now back to this inside the state of Georgia. It's interesting because like losing a kid to Louisville is not something you ever want to happen. I mean, you know, you can understand the Bamas, you can understand the Ohio States. You don't love it, but you can understand it. Losing a kid to Louisville and then having a kid trending towards South Carolina and then another kid trending towards Florida State. If you're Georgia and you're Kirby Smart, Zach, what is that about? Like, does Kirby Smart have to close? Is it the head coach's job at the end of the day to close on kids that they want? Or what's that about? What's that like?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely, it's the head coach is the lead recruiter on all your top prospects. So if it's not getting done, it's the head coach's fault. And this is not a story that we've not seen before from Kirby Smart in Georgia. I mean, they came off a 12-2 year, number five in the country in 2019, and they go to a 2020 class where they signed two kids out of the top 24, I think I told you.
In their own state.
Two out of the top 24 players in the state of Georgia went to Georgia, and they were loaded. Eric Gilbert, who now plays for Georgia, transferred to Georgia. They missed him. He went to LSU. Miles Murphy, the D end at Clemson. Will Anderson, you heard of him? The best defensive end in college football playing at Alabama. Tank Bigsby. And then the kid that just transferred to Alabama, the running back from Georgia Tech, Jahmyr Gibbs. Mm-hmm. So we've seen this story before, right? We've seen this happen with Kirby Smart before just 2 years ago. So we can blame NIL. And I think that plays a part in it, but this motherfucker's done this before. He had a really good year and swung and missed in his own state.
It's weird. And then additionally, like the quarterback thing as well, I have a weird feeling about Georgia going into this year. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to get. I'm a little bit confused about the program. They win the Natty and yet no momentum. I mean, they have kids. Usually when you win the Natty, guys don't transfer out. Like Burton transferred to Bama. Then you get the kid, the quarterback, number one quarterback in the state of Georgia. Zach, Bama already has a top flight kid committed at that position. And that kid is from Georgia. And the kid's like, you know what? I want to go join a room that has some like a top 10 quarterback in the country already committed.
Well, I mean, you just got to look at it, right? What it's your career, right? You have one shot at it. Do you really trust Kirby Smart in Georgia if you're a quarterback? I don't. I mean, just as simple as picking Jake Fromm over Justin Fields, right? Or fast forward to the debacle that has been the quarterback positions, pet JT Daniels and all the shit that went on. Like, he has yet to develop a quarterback or pick the right one, in my opinion. So I wouldn't trust it if I was a quarterback. I would absolutely rather go duel it out at Alabama. And if I miss out, I can transfer somewhere. You could always transfer back to Georgia. Georgia's just always looking for a quarterback to transfer in. So I don't see the value in going to Georgia if I'm a quarterback right now. Yeah. Why would you?
Exactly. I mean, in comparison to last year, Zach, last year, the state of Georgia alone, they landed 4-10 kids in the state of Georgia, and the ones that they lost were to Texas A&M, and then obviously Travis Hunter, the number one player in the country. That was a rare exception to Jackson State. So the fact of the matter is, this isn't a trend. I mean, they did really well last year, and you would think they'd be able to kind of lap it up. But this year, to be losing guys to Miami, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Clemson when it wasn't like that last year, to me, it's definitely a really weird situation around the program. And additionally, last year, they also got the number one quarterback in the state to go there. It's weird. For as dominant as Georgia has been, like, they've been one of the top five teams every single year, it's odd that they can't build a fence around their own state.
Well, and it's red flag emoji, right? Red flag emoji everywhere. It's like, why? What's going on at Georgia? Like, no different than Michigan. What's going on at Michigan? Michigan has the best year they've had in a decade, at least. And Jim Harbaugh's trying to jump ship, can't land a recruit. Everyone in the state's going elsewhere. Like, red flags everywhere to the future of the program. And right now, Kirby's reeling. He's got to get some shit going. He's got to figure it out in recruiting. He better start bringing in some fucking dudes. And he better have more success, because it's so fragile, especially being in that conference in the SEC. Boy, you can't have a couple bad classes or you're going to find yourself like fucking Florida, right? Sitting there like, damn, we stink.
And they're still going to put together a good class. It is early, but it is weird, because usually you want to lock down the kids in your own state early and have them be the leaders of the class. I noticed that is something that really you've seen built. Now they're going to have a good recruiting class, Zach. Like, I don't want that to get twisted, but they are getting beat pretty bad in their own state. Here's Brendan Kelly late to the argument. We don't hold them to the same standard, but I digress. I do want to talk about the Jelani Thurman.
To answer the question, the number 7 class in the country coming off a national championship where everyone in your state is going to other schools. Fuck yeah, that's a failure. That's a fucking epic failure. You should be the number 1 class in the country. Why aren't you? Because you just won it all. You have all the momentum in the world. You're the hot ticket right now. Why are you not number 1, at least number 2, maybe number 3, but number 7 at Georgia? What are we doing? I know they went into Alabama and nabbed a 5-star corner. That's great. But if you aren't building fences around your own state, the longevity of success is in the whims, right? It's a really, really dangerous thing to not lock down your own state.
No, I agree. And we've talked about it before. And it's funny, because people are going to see the rankings and think that we're overreacting. We're more just talking about, there are some weird red flags with Georgia that we haven't seen with other schools. We're going to be a little bit harder on Ohio State too, because Ohio State's been struggling. But I do want to start with this. Jelani Thurman, the 6'6" kid, the tight end, has committed to Ohio State. That's a kid from Georgia. Zach, did this surprise you getting the tight end from Georgia? I mean, the kid looks like a freak. He's 6'6".
Freaky. I mean, he's raw and freaky, but you know, that's what you want at tight end. Rarely do you just have some polished fucking tight end prospect and you're like, this kid's a first rounder. You want a Kyle Pitts type of player. You want a kid that is just like Brock Bowers. My God, you can't get any freakier than that kid. And so the kid that committed, I think he has some freaky tendencies, and it's shocking because Ohio State doesn't do shit with their tight ends. Literally, Jeremy Ruckert is an NFL tight end, and they rarely utilize them. And so, yeah, it's a great job by Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day to get this kid to commit and maybe you know, with Joe Royer and Cade Stover, and now that this kid comes in, and maybe they start to get some momentum at the position and start using the tight end more. Maybe they do that. But again, it's like going back to, would a quarterback go to Georgia? If I'm a tight end, I'm not going to Ohio State.
That's fair.
Like, I'm not risking it to just sit there and block seven-man pass pro all the time. Why would you risk that? So great job by the Ohio State staff. I was very surprised, though, yes.
So I do want to ask you, what goes into recruiting tight ends and evaluating tight ends? You've talked about kind of the things you look at when you're discussing like offensive linemen, but I haven't asked you about tight ends. And you, as a former receivers coach, how often did you work with them? Did tight end coaches ever have you go along with them? Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that awkward deal where it's a kid's a big – a perfect example was Mark Andrews. Mm-hmm. Mark Andrews was in Scottsdale, Arizona. I went out to recruit him because the kid demanded that he was a receiver, wanted to play receiver, only wanted to be recruited by receiver coaches. So me and a bunch of other receiver coaches are out in fucking Arizona looking at this kid, evaluating this kid, recruiting this kid, all of us well knowing that he'll never play for us. He will be a tight end for sure. And so you're sitting there like, I mean – I guess I got to play the game.
Was he ever fast enough to be a receiver?
He was never going to be a receiver. He was like 6'5", 230 in high school. And you're like, bro, what are you talking about? You're not a receiver. You're a first round draft pick tight end. And so there's always that tough dichotomy where a kid wants to be a receiver, doesn't really want to block people. And so you have to evaluate like, okay, is this kid talented enough to be a Kyle Pitts, to play tight end, but really not block anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he a pussy? Is he just not going to be able to do it, what you want him to do in the position? And so you don't recruit him, no matter how talented he is, because he can't play the position because there's no desire, no want to put his face on somebody, to block a D end, to do the things that tight ends need to do.
So what do you think about the Thurman kid? What do you think he projects? You think is a 2-year starter? You think he needs some time?
No,
like who's he working with?
There's no way to even project that he'll ever start because right now, I mean, he needs to develop into a tight end. He's a freaky athlete, which that's great. That's what you look for. And if they can develop him into a tight end, an actual like blocking and receiving tight end, then he's going to be a great player. But the jury's out on that. There's no way that anyone that doesn't deeply, intimately know this kid could know. Is he tough enough? Like, will he go fuck up a DN? Will he do those things? I don't know.
With the way the offense is and the way the recruiting has been on the wide receiver side, Zach, sometimes I think that's going to make it harder for us to recruit tight ends because, like, realistically, like, how good does a tight end have to be to demand the offense change a little bit? Or do you think Ryan Day will get to a point where he's willing to change the offense a little bit and get the tight ends more involved? Like, Sterling Brucker was an exceptional tight end.
Yeah, you just want to feature great players. That's what you want to do. And, I mean, the style of offense is usually dictated by that. I think Ryan is as innovative as anyone. I think Kevin Wilson is a little more, you know, not stuck in his ways, but he kind of does what he does. And going seven-man pass pro and throwing some concepts is a Kevin Wilson thing. And so they're always going to do that. But Ryan definitely is innovative enough to do it. And you look back at our tenure, you know, back in my career, we had guys like Aaron Hernandez and Jeff Heirman even was utilized a little more than Jeremy Ruckert was. I mean, there's a place for tight ends. And you watch what goes on in the NFL. I mean, some of these tight ends, Darren Wallers and Gronks and, you know, there's a ton of them. It's just there's a skill set there to be utilized. Mm-hmm. And so I think if they get the right kid, and what I saw from Joe Royer, holy shit, that kid's got to be involved.
Is it the year of the tight end, Zach?
No, it's not the year of the
tight end. I told him I'd find out next episode. I love it. Dude, watching – hold up. Darren Waller in college was one of my absolute favorite things. He didn't play tight end in college. He was a wide receiver. And they had him out there in the triple option, just like one-on-one with DBs and blocking 90% of the time. And it's like, if you're a DB, Zach, you go out there and you're what 5'10", 5'11", and you gotta line up against 6'7", Darren Waller. And and you know, they're going to run the ball. You know, he's going to put their hands on you. Just unfair. I would have had a torn ACL.
Unfair. I heard all about him. Corey Dennis's teammate. The quarterback coach at Ohio State played with him, and that's all they talked about was how freaky he was. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. A receiver from Georgia Tech, like, what did he block? But here he is in the NFL crushing it.
After a position change, which he never wanted. He kind of pushed back on it for way too long. If he would have switched sooner, I mean, shit, if he was in the transfer portal era, he could have transferred somewhere and been a really good tight end for somebody because the kid's an absolute freak. Even though Ohio State landed that kid, Zach, there's been some concerns over the recruiting of Ohio State, especially defensively. Out of their top 5 recruits this year for this cycle already committed, Only one of them is a defensive player, and it was landed by Larry Johnson, who's you know, obviously a legend in some areas.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about the defensive recruiting a little bit, and this is the point where you kind of tell me I'm tripping or whatever, but Knowles, coming from Oklahoma State, do we know he can recruit? I mean, Perry Aliano coming from Cincinnati, do we know he can recruit? Because right now, they are both getting put in lockers by the teams down south. Look at my guy Cameron. Jim Knowles is in a locker, man. He's getting beat up bad. The kid he's been recruiting for over 2 years just got crystal balled to USC, and they don't even have a defense. Alex Grinch is putting him in a locker. Zach, am I bugging, or is this cause for concern?
I mean, it's growing pains, right? You're going to have it to some extent. I mean, Jim Knowles has never recruited at this level. And as much respect as you can have for a guy and his resume and what he's done, I've lived it. I mean, I was at Marshall, Temple, and then I jumped to Ohio State. And although Oklahoma State is a cut above Marshall and Temple, like, recruiting at Ohio State is different. When you go into those recruiting battles with Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, USC, like, this big boy recruiting now. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to beat Iowa State on a kid. You are trying to go against the best of the best. Guys that get paid fucking six figures, high six figure salaries, solely because they're excellent recruiters. So yeah, he's getting put in a fucking locker. But at some point, it's got to change. And that's where Ryan Day has to step in. That's where you got a team recruit, right? Because not only is Jim Knowles getting beat in recruiting right now, Ryan Day is on the defensive side of the ball. And again, back to, do you want to risk it? Like, does a high school kid, a top flight defensive recruit, know for a fact that they could be developed into a first round draft pick with Jim Knowles? The answer is no, not for a fact. Now, Larry Johnson, that's very easy to see, right? But and so at some point, he's going to have to either develop four stars into first rounders or he's going to have to win some of these recruiting battles. That's just simple. It just is what it is.
Our last big visit, Zach, there was not a lot of noise from it. I thought it was going to be good coming out of it. But since then, all those kids are going to other schools. And this is a really good point. One thing I've noticed is that people say, oh, the new staff needs time to adjust. Miami and USC are both kind of first time staff, and they're dunking on everybody.
It's an excuse. I mean, you have to think about it, right? You need momentum in recruiting, right? It needs to be sexy to come to your school. It's all momentum based. And so a new staff injects momentum into the recruiting process. Like, you could say all that shit. What do they need? They need to go to like a retreat, do some trust falls. The fuck do we mean they need more time together? You don't need time together. You got to take that momentum and go put your fucking boots on and recruit with the big dogs. That's what you need to do. It has nothing to do with more time together. Figure it out. It's like, oh, they just started dating. Shut the fuck up. Go beat someone and get a big time fucking player. That's what they need to do, right? All that other shit is excuses. And that's for the birds. And those excuses aren't getting you five stars. They aren't getting you great players. So have fun with those excuses. That's nonsense. That's fan blinders.
Do you worry about the age of Jim Knowles and recruiting some of these kids? Because, like, I have a lot of faith in Justin Fry. I saw Justin Fry go beat Adazio, and he kind of evaluates things a little bit differently. When Halfley was here year one, he did a really good job kind of connecting with the kids. But Jim Knowles kind of being a longtime journeyman, not a football player. Do we worry about him recruiting? I mean, we're paying him $2 million. And I'm okay with him being really good at X's and O's, but the last thing I want is for Bama to land 4 or 5-star DBs and us not get any, and we miss out on a linebacker to USC with Alex Grinch, who, I don't know your conversations with him, but I always thought he was a poor recruiter.
He's a fine recruiter. He's a young guy that relates well and works hard. That's all you need. And what is he doing right now with the momentum they have going to USC? He's capitalizing on the momentum. So you can't shit on him as a recruiter. He's doing it. He's doing it right in front of our very own eyes. And it's a part of it is Jim Knowles. Part of it is Ryan Day, but also at some point you have to look at assistant coaches. Like, it's Larry Johnson's job to go bring in great D linemen, not Jim Knowles. That's Larry's job. And Larry does it, right? So you have to look at these new coaching hires and say, all right, I know you, Perry Aliano, and I know you recruited at Cincinnati. You developed two great, great corners. You got to go recruit with the big boys. You got to go beat Alabama on a corner, right? That's where the onus falls on each individual coach. And if we're not seeing it, then they got to change something. They got to do something different.
How much blame does Ryan Day get for? Because at a point as a position coach, do you kind of pass it off to the head coach to kind of close the deal and get it finished? I mean, I heard stories about Urban Meyer as a finisher. I don't know how true any of them were, but it feels like Ryan Day as a finisher has struggled outside of the quarterback position.
Well, Ryan Day knows the quarterback position. He can sell receivers on their future, their career, right? He has proof. He's an expert in that field. Mm-hmm. Urban was a master of psychology. So he could close kids with you. You never pass the kid off to Urban because he's liable to fuck it up too. But he could close kids better than anyone I've ever been around. So absolutely the onus falls on Ryan. It's the head coach. Everything falls on Ryan, right? If they win, if they lose, if they get a kid, if they don't get a kid. It is either the head coach's doing or his allowed doings. He either allowed average recruiting or great recruiting, right? And was a part of it. It's just, it always falls on the head duck. Always.
Do you think Ryan Day kind of allows average recruiting, trusting the development of his guys? Because, I mean, Stud was in there kind of a long time. There was some concerns about his recruiting just kind of from the jump. And with Knowles, do you think he's going to trust Knowles to, like, get maybe his 4- and 3-star guys, but then develop them really, really well? Or do you think there will be an emphasis from Ryan to go get the 5-star kids that Bama and Georgia are getting?
Well, there comes a point where it's like, all right, what is Jim Knowles' job right now? I mean, we're paying $2 million. And the reason that Ryan paid him $2 million was to bring his culture and coaching and teaching to Ohio State. They didn't hire Jim Knowles to be some fucking stud recruiter. And I get it. People are going to say for $2 million, you should be able to do both. Yeah, you should. Some people can. But ultimately, why are we paying $650,000 to some assistant coach? If Jim Knowles is this guru that we're paying $2 million, this guy's getting $650 to teach what Jim Knowles tells him to teach and fucking recruit. That's it, right? It's like when I was the receiver coach. My job was to make sure the receivers played well and did what Tom Herman and Urban wanted them to do and develop a culture and get them to block. But ultimately, it was go sign great fucking players. That was the job. Yeah. Tony Alford's job. Granted, he's a great teacher. He knows football really well. His fucking job is to recruit Travion Henderson. That's why he makes the money he makes. These assistant coaches on defense, that's what their salary's for. And if they're not getting it done, it is on them. Jim Knowles is the CEO. Ryan Day is the, you know, the board of directors. Yes, they are in charge. But the assistant coaches are getting paid to recruit first. Mm. Period.
It is certainly a position of luxury, though, Zach, because I'm sitting here complaining about the defensive recruiting. We got our guy Cody, who loves to pop in here and troll us with the Bama stuff, talking about we're going to lose Caleb Downs, the kid from Georgia, number one safety, one of our top targets, to Alabama as well before the month is over. It is interesting kind of complaining from all this while we currently have the number one overall recruiting class and there's no quarterback committed. Hey,
To be elite, right? You're pushing the envelope, trying to be better than you were yesterday, Chris. Number one's not good enough.
Mm-mm. It's scary because, Zach, like, if our defensive recruiting ever caught up just a fraction to our offensive recruiting, it'd be over for everybody.
I'm just saying, why is the class number one right now? I mean, mm-hmm. Look at it. The top three rated kids on the fucking commitment list are all three receivers.
Yeah.
So Brian Hartline has the number one class in the country. The Ohio State doesn't.
Are you giving Brian Hartline credit? We hate Brian Hartline on this platform.
Oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. I forgot he replaced me, and I have to hate him and say he's bad.
I'm pretty sure someone on TikTok said that Brian Hartline fired you.
Hey, I'm going to tell you what. I just got to get this off my chest. I've always said Twitter's the most volatile place in social media, like second to none, until our TikTok started exploding. TikTok is the most volatile social media app in the world, and the number of fucking idiots that have TikTok accounts. I mean, they'll argue with me about shit. I'm like, hold on. What are you? Who are you? Like, somebody had the audacity just before the show commented on the Evan Spencer story and said, That wasn't a dot. That wasn't a good pass. Michael Thomas just made a great play. I'm like, what? That ball was threaded perfectly where only Mike could get it. Like, but then I have to remind myself, like, this is probably some 12-year-old in seventh grade, like, study hall commenting right now because he's in summer school because he's that fucking dumb. I don't know. It's just what a volatile place.
Zach, my favorite was after we posted the Terrell Pryor video. We were talking about how much a freak he was and kind of your first time seeing him. And remember, one of the comments was like, oh, this guy's so fucking stupid. I bet you he's never heard of Cam Newton. It's like,
yeah.
Like, oh, we can we not talk about – like Terrell Pryor without someone said you just never probably never heard of Cam Newton. Yeah, it's not like
never heard of Cam Newton. I knew Cam Newton when he was fucking 17. So sounds good though. Like knew him, had conversations with him.
No, you didn't. No, I didn't. By then, Brian fired you. So you know shit about football. Absolutely ridiculous. Back on the subject of recruiting, it is super interesting that number one overall class, we are, you know, recruiting well. We're struggling defensively. And kind of the thing that gets talked about is, Zach, are we becoming a Big 12 team? Are we becoming Charmin ultra soft? Is there a worry that this team will not be able to get it done in the trenches? Or is that kind of just a fun narrative that, you know, rivals like to poke around?
That sounds cute. I know these sons of bitches now. Mickey Marotti, Justin Fry, and we've seen what Jim Knowles' defenses are. Like, that's cute. But you're not going to see that shit come September. Never going to happen.
Facts. I'm 100% here for it. And I do want to say in this NIL era, Zach, one of the things I'm noticing is like you're flash in the pan, like boosters, right? So each year I expect one team to dump out a ton of money and randomly have one of the top three classes. Last year it was Texas A&M. This year it looks like it's Miami, who's beaten Alabama on a bunch of offensive linemen because I know they're playing with the bag, but it seems like they need 2 or 3 years to kind of recruit the money. Because
yeah, you got
to
save up.
Yeah, you got Tennessee. You got to save up because these boosters can't keep putting $30 million into recruiting classes every single year. So you're going to have to battle all the flash in the pan recruiting. And I will say, Zach, in 2 years, I expect those kids that went to those universities hit the portal hard. Deuces.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
Like, go hit the portal. Like, literally, if you're Ohio State and you're Justin Fry, you call Miami in 2 years. They got to lose a tackle. Someone's got to leave.
Yeah, you're watching teams that their boosters are sick of being mediocre, right? Tennessee, Miami, USC, they're just tired of it. They're tired of being mediocre, and they've found a means to the end in their mind, right? And so they're going to spend all this money right now thinking it is going to be an investment quick fix. Their program will become Alabama, and then they can spend far less because they've flipped the program. It's a program changer. That's what they're trying to do. It's great, great philosophy. Great attack plan. It's just got to work, right? Those kids need coach developed, and you got to win. And if you do, hey, money well spent. If you don't, boy, did you blow through a lot of cash.
Like and while that's happening, while these schools are putting all this upfront cash, I did notice over the weekend what Ohio State did with the foundation, which I think is really cool. It's fabulous. Four players signing six-figure deals: Denzel Burke, CJ Stroud, JSN, and Trayvon Henderson. So big congrats to them for
all four kids would have played for Ohio State this fall without those contracts.
That's important. That's a message to
I've all said recruits. It before, and I'll say it again. The NIL stuff is great for keeping a kid. And that's why I've said all along, in a year or two, or maybe, you know, who knows how soon, everyone that's a great player will entertain the portal just to get their money up because you got to buy players. That's what you do. That's what you're doing. And so my question is, are Ohio State boosters misguided, or are they securing deals for recruits too? I mean, you said it, number one class in the country right now. That certainly doesn't go without some kind of NIL conversation. So are they out there like these other boosters offering deals to high school kids? Because otherwise it's great to you know, get those deals for your superstars here to keep them happy. But CJ Stroud was going to be the quarterback this year. He was not going anywhere as of when this deal was announced yesterday, and he's leaving after this year. So I get it, but did you need to do that?
No. And it is kind of funny because then like, oh, CJ Stroud got a six-figure deal. Yada, yada, this, yada, yada, that. But then it's like, then I remember the Nico kid got a seven-figure deal and he's still in high school.
Right. That's what I mean. It's like, what are we talking about here? I mean, that's great. I mean, It's part of it is for recruiting, right? To be like, just come here. We think you'll be the starting quarterback. We'll develop you. Show the NFL development. And then it's like, look what CJ Stroud gets. Like, look what you will get when you are the quarterback. That's a recruiting tactic, right? Mm-hmm. You get a G-Wagon. You get, you know, six-figure NIL deals. You'll get all that when you're the starting quarterback. But the question is that enough to get a kid?
Yeah.
Because if that kid's getting offered six-figure deals right now, whether you're starting quarterback or not, that's tough to turn down.
Facts. All right, Zach, I have a recruiting question for you, a recruiting politics question. So I think everybody that we talk to, everybody in our chat, drop if we're tripping or not, if you disagree with us. Do you think that Arch Manning is the number one player in the country. And I think collectively, most of us will say, no, he's not the best player in the country, not the best quarterback in the country. Zach, do you think a recruiting service, one of the four major recruiting services, will end up bumping him down from the number one player, or will that Manning name carry him to the finish line?
Yeah, it's just going to depend on how he does. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he has another playoff game where he throws for like 33 yards or whatever the fuck it was, then yeah, he's getting bumped down. I don't give a shit what your last name is. But if he goes out and has a good year this year, they'll probably keep him there just because of the allure, the clicks. I mean, it's a money making business, right? The name Arch Manning in an article right now gets clicks. So you don't want to fuck that up. Now, that being said, imagine the clicks you'd get
if you drop him,
if you unseat him and put someone ahead of him. So I think it will happen unless he just goes out and proves me wrong and is the number one player in the country.
Yeah. And it's funny because like he's proven that he's not the number one overall player in the country. Like some of these playoff games, some of these bad plays. And if I'm a recruiting service, Zach, like from the business side, evaluation or not, I'm bumping him down tomorrow. Like OM3 did their big like eval, like their big reveal or something. But they're treating the Mannings like they're some mobsters, like they're scared of them. Like literally just bump him down and the amount of clicks and the amount of social media buzz around your site goes up immediately. And it's funny because they did it last year with Devin Brown. They skyrocketed him up. And it's like, you won't do it with Manning. Because if you're the second team, if you're the second service to bump Manning down, man, you're basically last.
Like, yeah, you missed the boat, right? Yeah, to get those clicks.
Exactly. And like we said, like with the PFF stuff, right? It's all about the clicks. Zach, I want to ask you about the Big 12 and not so much of a preseason breakdown, but just like they're like the forgotten conference. They're the redheaded stepchild because they don't really matter. And same with the Pac-12, but they have USC now. So Death Beam pointed at you. I'm bringing it out. Does a team from the Big 12 make the playoffs this year? No one's giving them a shot to make it, but people think, you know, USC and the Pac-12 will make it. But would it surprise you if Texas or Oklahoma was a better team than USC this year? All new coaching staffs, serviceable quarterbacks, and good coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I think both schools will have a relatively, I mean, outside of the Bama game, that's going to be the question, right? Can Texas lose to Bama and still make the playoffs? And I think Texas is talented enough. They have honestly one of the best running backs in the country. Bijan Robinson and Travion Henderson, I think, are the two best running backs in the country. And they're going to have decent quarterback play with Quinn Ewers, you would assume. Sark, his resume speaks for itself that Quinn will be ready to play. So the question is going to be about their big guys, their lines. And I don't know much about them right now. I haven't started researching some of those national teams, but it's going to come down to defense and offensive line. And if they have a serviceable offensive line and a decent defense, then they have a chance for sure. But I think that's why people aren't talking about them, because just because you slap a Quinn Ewers in the backfield and you got a Bijan Robinson, it doesn't mean you have a great football team. You got to have fucking linemen. You got to have a defense that tackles well. Like, you have to do all those things that Texas has not done. So,
and Texas has a giant, and I believe week two.
Giant.
Yeah. Like,
giant. I mean, so we'll see. I mean, would it surprise me if Texas is in the mix? No, but they're going to have to do a lot in offensive line development and getting their defense to play championship quality defense. So they're not.
Oklahoma? You think they fell off the map? You think they're done with Brent Venables? Do you trust them?
Yeah. I mean, I can't jump on that train yet. Yeah. Brent Venables, the way he coordinated a defense was so chaotic. So him oriented, right? He called the plays. He made the checks. Like, the players didn't do shit. It was fucking chaos everywhere. And the players just ran fast, hit hard, and corrupted offenses, right? Just chaos. I don't see how that translates to being a head coach, right? And he could prove me wrong, but I never have thought Brent Venables was a head coach. I thought he was perfect where he was. I thought he was going to ride that out forever, be a million-dollar coordinator at Clemson for his entire career. I've never thought he was a fit to be a great head coach. Fast forward until now, he's talking about putting hoses in his mouth and sucking it off and all this other gay shit. Like, he just doesn't strike me as a head coach.
Yeah.
And so, no, I would be shocked if Oklahoma was in the mix.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I was really curious about that, but just because, like, we've kind of anointed USC as kind of that fourth or fifth team, just because we acknowledge the sleeping giant, we acknowledge Lincoln Riley's a good coach, but we have not talked about the other two schools, and maybe it's because they're going to the SEC, maybe it's because, you know, everyone's out on Quinn Ewers or maybe in on Quinn Ewers. I'm not entirely sure. It's just a little weird. Zach, I want to ask you, circle back to recruiting. Like when you missed on a kid and like, it's like you had still had spots in your room, would you give that spot to another kid that maybe wasn't good enough to play for Ohio State? Or would you always find kids that are good enough for Ohio State to fill so that spot?
I have always been of the opinion that you get great players that absolutely can start Ohio State and draw the line right under that. And if you don't get a great player that can play at Ohio State, if you miss out on one spot, it's not a huge deal. If you miss out on two year in, year out, that becomes a problem because you need bodies. But right. I've never seen like a reach for a kid end up panning out. I mean, it happened many times in my career at many positions, and it was all Urban's deal. Like, we have to get someone because he always was in this fear that, like, we were going to have no players. One year, we're going to just show up, and there's no players. We don't have any. So he always felt the need to use every single scholarship and honestly sign over every year, and he would reach on players, and 99.999% of the time, those players never played because guess what? Mm-hmm. They weren't good enough to begin with, and we knew that. And it's like, why do that? Why?
Well, it's like right now, Zach, we have zero linebackers committed in this class and we're having a tough time. And it's like, Zach, bro, like if we keep missing on linebackers now, we're still in it for Tackett Curtis. Like we're trying, but we are trending away. But it's like if Jim Knowles, this linebacker, like this guru linebackers, can't get a linebacker, do you think he's going to take a couple three-star, two-star kids? Or like, what are we doing?
I mean,
or even quarterback. Like, are we going to take a quarterback this year? Which I don't need to
take a quarterback in this class. But linebacker's concerning because it was the position of concern for 2 years. We hired a $2 million guy to come in and fix all our problems. And there's no linebackers coming to Ohio State right now. So it is a major, major sirens are going off. Red flags are going up. Like, we got to get that shit fixed. Ryan has to get that shit fixed. Like they need to go out and get some big time players because of all the positions that you'd love to see the top three players in the class be, you'd love for them to be linebackers because we're good at receiver. We've got a bunch of those. Like, don't get me wrong. Brandon Ennis, Cardale Tate, Noah Rogers, bring them all. Yeah. Like great players. We'll take them. But
it's defensive tackles and linebackers. It's like, first of all, like a two linebacker offense is going to be tricky to get kids in. I firmly believe, but Zach, I don't know what you do if you're Jim Knowles, because you can't take, like you said, you would draw the line of players underneath you or whatever, but Zach, like you can't class and have zero linebackers, right?
Well, no, you can't. But the good news is they signed a ridiculously talented class last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, they got a bunch of young, talented, very highly thought of, rated, whatever the fuck you want to say, linebackers that just came in. So I think it definitely. It's concerning, but it's not panic mode yet. I mean, you got the fucking lid open and that panic button's right there. You're ready to hit it, but I don't think you need to hit it yet. I think they need to keep pushing, find a way to flip that Tackett kid if they can, get him to be a Buckeye, and then start some momentum. And the real class is next class.
Yeah.
Because you can't swing and miss on two classes in a row.
Back to back.
And we talked about it with Brian Hartline's receiver recruiting. Like, people act like every single class he's had have been loaded with five stars. They haven't. He just had a class a year ago that was kind of like, yeah, just okay.
Yeah, it was weird. It was a weird class. Like that was the first time we didn't get the number one.
Yeah, but he didn't need to, right? Mm-hmm. The room was so loaded. He just needed some guys, maybe project guys, have a chance guys that you could maybe develop. And if one of them turns into a great player, that's a huge get. Mm-hmm. And then the next class needs to be star studded. And that's what he did, right? You look at it right here, three five-star receivers or whatever it is, two five-stars and a four-star committed in this 2023 class. You didn't need to do it last year. You just needed to get in guys that, you know, could potentially become great players.
Right.
Maybe play on special teams, like not going to transfer. Like you need to have depth and you need to have good culture players in your room.
Yep. Mecca was 2 years ago. I don't know, because Mitch is talking about that. Obviously, we haven't said that Brian's been terrible in every recruiting class, even though we hate Brian Hartline on this platform. Don't get it twisted. Yeah. Zach, during the season, when things are going well, how much do you circle back on guys like recruiting? Like if you have a game where your receiver's going crazy, do you use that to capture momentum? And do you think Knowles, like if the linebackers start playing really, really well, will circle back during the season on some kids? Because I do have to remind myself, it's only July. But I don't know if you have time during the season to really hit kids hard.
it's, it's only July, but this is where recruiting has gone. I mean, kids sign in December, they commit in the summer, and it's over. It's done. So yeah, if you're having a great year, you certainly want to stay in contact with those kids, even if they commit elsewhere. You want to entertain, see if they'll entertain you and your school still. And who knows? Things can change, right? You want to keep recruiting them hard, because what could happen? I don't know. Lincoln Riley could go 6-6 this year, right? Alex Grinch could get fired. Who knows what's going to happen? And so you want to stay in the mix and stay in contact, keep building that relationship, and try to flip them, because there's a lot that can happen from now till December.
Yeah, that's fair. Oh, I don't know about this, Zach. Can you speak of when Urban Meyer said the 2012 offseason, we're going to have the greatest offseason in the history of offseasons? Did he say that?
I didn't know he said that.
Oh. How do players react to Urban coming in? Because he seems kind of abrasive, kind of mean, obviously like a little bit of an asshole.
It was teetering on a revolution. They almost
really?
Revolted. Oh, absolutely.
Almost revolted against Urb. Oh, I need to hear it.
Yeah, you got to think. Urban Meyer walks in the door with his new coaching staff and does things drastically different than Jim Tressel, right? Both ways work, and that's the problem, is these players had success under a different leadership style. Most of the time when you come in, you're coming into a place that the leadership style failed, right? Mm-hmm. You lost games. Jim Tressel didn't lose games. He was wildly successful. So we came in, and Urban was abrasive and trying to change a culture, right? Fired everybody, brought in new coaches. And then, oh, those poor sons of bitches, the couple O linemen didn't show up on time for the first team meeting, Urban's first team meeting as the head coach. And it was all she wrote. We're out there at 5:30 in the morning, 5:15 in the morning, in the snow. Kids are doing bear crawls, all this just in insanity.
And I mean, quit.
Several did. Several walked off and quit. I forget the name kid's name, but he transferred to Duke and was an all ACC player, a safety at that. Just literally in the middle of workout, I was like, fuck you guys, I'm out, and got up and walked out. So yeah, I mean, it was a major transition. Guys like Zach Boren and some of these players that were so successful under Jim Tressel that didn't buy in. They hated Urban until they started to see what he was doing. Right. And that wasn't until that week four, I think, of the season where they finally started buying in. And it took that long because he's that big of a fucking dictator asshole.
Jeremy Cash. That's the kid. Good Jeremy player. Jeremy Cash.
There he is.
Yeah. Good player.
And Zach, Urban used him forever. He in post-practice conversations, he'd be like, it's really hard to be great. Really, really fucking hard. I get it. It's a lot easier. I mean, go somewhere else. Go be a Dookie. Go be a Dookie if you want. He said it all the time because that kid went to Duke.
Jesus. How important was it for you guys to go undefeated? Was that something that ate away at you? Because that was something that ate away at me. Like, I wanted to go undefeated so bad that year.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously wanted to go undefeated.
Yeah, I'm just saying, did it mean the world to you? Because obviously with the bowl games, with the suspension, like, that was all I thought about, though, day in and day out, was going undefeated.
No, we didn't think about it at all because we didn't think our team was very good, honestly. All the coaches have said it several times. That might be the worst undefeated team that's ever went undefeated. We just weren't there yet as a program. The players weren't bought in, the work ethic, understanding football at the level you expect them to. We had a bunch of guys playing that shouldn't have been playing. They were too young. I mean, they failed in recruiting over a 2-year span. And at my room specifically, I walked in the room like, where the fuck are the guys at? Like, where are the Ohio State players? Mm. Like, I left a room at Temple that's better than this fucking room.
Whoa,
and chill. It was because you had guys like Evan Spencer and Devin Smith that were just, they were babies. They weren't ready to be stars yet. I mean, Devin was talented. Mm. Evan went hard and was smart and knew the plays, but they weren't the players you saw in 2014, in 2012. And then Philly Brown was, I mean, he wasn't there yet. We had to move Jake Stoneburner from tight end to receiver just so I had one guy who could play.
I want you to answer this again. Yes, I love this question.
and the sad part is, to the comment on YouTube, that 2012 team would have beat Notre Dame by 2 touchdowns just because we had Braxton Miller. Mm-hmm. And we had some great players. Don't get me wrong. John Simon, Zach Boren was a great player. There were some great players on that team. But we absolutely would have beat Notre Dame without question.
Like, this guy keeps talking, man. I think he's new to the show. He's kind of making fun of us for saying Georgia is struggling recruiting-wise. I'm just urging this guy to go back and listen to what we said. Obviously, we know that they're a top 10 recruiting class this year. Obviously, we know that, you know, Georgia is one of the powerhouses. But people get held to a different standard. And when you can't close up on your own state like you did last year, and when guys from your own program are jumping ship, like some of your best players, dog, like we're gonna talk about it because Georgia feels weird.
Fuck that. Your seventh ranked recruiting class in the country after winning a national championship. That is an epic fucking failure. On top of that, Georgia's not gonna win the SEC East this year. They're not. Your defense is gone. Fucking receivers jumped ship and went to Alabama. Like, and you got Stetson Bennett holding his little dick in his hand. He's not beating Bama. You had a great year. Georgia was a phenomenal football team last year. That team is gone. So no, we listen to what I just said. That's what I said. Georgia's okay. Definitely going to have a down year, and they're fucking up momentum in recruiting after winning a national championship. Facts. 100 emoji.
Hey, tell him how easy it was to recruit after 2014 when you guys won the title.
Well, fucking everybody wanted to come. We won a national championship. Everybody wanted to come. Like, who didn't want to come?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all in for it. Everybody wanted to come. Everybody, you were turning guys away? You were turning guys away in 2014?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, we got who we wanted. Right, you didn't have to turn guys away. It just kind of happened naturally. But yeah, after you win the national championship, especially the first college football playoff, I mean, you walk in that fucking school with that ring on mm-hmm. and that jacket on and all that shit. People are like, damn, like that's the show. It's the fucking New York Yankees.
Facts. Well, Zach, bro, I got nothing else for today. I like
that's all I got to. Appreciate everybody again. Appreciate the growth. If you haven't yet, subscribe down below. We don't always talk shit about Georgia, just today, just to piss you off if you're a Georgia fan. But subscribe down below, like the video, and comment how big of a dumbass I am for thinking Georgia is going to have a down year. Appreciate everybody. Menace out.